Thank you, Father. So yeah, I've been married for 23 years, and so I guess Father knows that one of my kids is a boy, but I have four boys. So it's my life is crazy. They're absolutely, I mean, they're amazing. My kids are amazing. My family is amazing. I'm so blessed. But it's crazy. And the biggest thing that I can tell you about myself, when I talk about my faith and my family, I'm Catholic, and I love being Catholic. I'm what you call a cradle Catholic, so which means that I was baptized as an infant into the Catholic Church. And I went to Catholic school all my life, and then I taught in a Catholic school, and I just love my faith. But there was one point in my life that I had to make a choice myself to be Catholic, to live as a Catholic, and be all in. And what does that mean? And how am I going to do that? And how am I going to apply it to my life? All of those things kind of went through my mind as I was growing and maturing. I come from a very devout Catholic family, and I'm so blessed to have been taught about my faith by my parents. And it's amazing. And that's what we're supposed to do. So when I got married and had kids, the thing that the privilege and responsibility that we have is to pass on our faith. But then at that point, you know, it has to become your own. So it did, and it is. And then you have to be consistent. So when Father's talking about the faith and living this way, you have to be consistent and understand what her teachings are. And sometimes you kind of need to dive a little bit deeper to know the why behind the what, to know why she teaches what she does. Because even though you might be like, I don't know if I like that. You don't have to like it, right? But dive a little bit deeper and figure out why she's teaching that way, and know that there's consistency in that. And then you have to apply it to your life. So here I am with a husband and four sons, and I have to be consistent. Because if I'm not consistent in my life, my kids are the first ones to call me on the carpet to tell me I'm not doing this or not doing that, or gee, you said this yesterday, but you did this today. So you have to be consistent. And so in all of it, in all of my life, my faith, my family, try to be consistent. And so what I want to present to you tonight is I want to present the truth of what the church teaches, the truth of our bodies, our body language, how we communicate, how our bodies were designed, and to understand that when we speak in truth, there's no fear. There's no fear in truth. There's no judgment in truth. But what there is in truth is there's courage. There's courage in truth. So understand that that's where we're coming from. And when we look at our bodies, the way they're designed, communication is imprinted in our bodies. How we communicate with each other as men and women is imprinted in our bodies. And we're going to dive into that. And I think there might be some things that you've never heard before. So if you have questions, if you need me to answer a question immediately, like you think you're going to forget the question, you have to know the answer right now, ask me. Interrupt me, you can ask me. If it can wait till the end, let it wait till the end. But don't forget. Don't forget, because I want to answer your questions. So here's a big statement that I don't want you to miss. Men and women are different. I mean, we are, right? We're different. We are made differently. In Genesis, God created male and female. And he did that on purpose. Like he had a plan. I love Father's homily. He's talking about a plan. Yes, he had a plan. He has a plan for us. He's a plan for you and me and our lives. And he had a plan for how we're going to communicate. And it's amazing. So let me tell you, men and women are different, and they're different by design. They look different, they act different, they react differently, they think differently, and communicate. We communicate differently. But here's a question. I do a lot of marriage ministry working with engaged couples, and the question is, okay, but are they equal? Yes. Yes, men and women are equal in value and in dignity, of course, but we're different. We are different. We are not made the same, and we have to understand that. So I want to start with our brains. Men and women's brains are different, and I am a woman who lives with five men. I live with five men. I'm here to tell you, men and women's brains, we're just put together differently. I could tell you that without knowing any biology. But my youngest son, so without going into a big long story, my youngest son was born by an emergency C-section. And I always say it was the Holy Spirit that saved his life, because it was the Holy Spirit prompting me to kind of go to the doctor and argue with the doctor and get to that hospital and all of that. So he had to have an MRI. When he had an MRI, it showed that his brain, so this was kind of like my clue. This is what brought me to this point. It showed that his brain's corpus callosum, which is the tissue that separates the right and left brain, it showed that his corpus callosum is abnormally thin. So the doctor said to me that since it's abnormally thin, that means that the messages that pass back and forth from his right to left brain will be slower. So literally, when he was little, we would watch him, and you could literally see him processing, him listening, hearing, listening, and spitting out what we were doing, or maybe, you know, doing the action what we were asking. So you could see those wheels turning. So that prompted me to dive a little bit deeper, to learn about what is the corpus callosum? What does that mean? What is it, you know, what does it mean for his brain structure? Men naturally have a thinner corpus callosum than women. Women's corpus callosum is naturally thicker. So what does that mean? A woman's brain, naturally, those messages that pass back and forth from the right to left brain, it naturally happens faster. Men, it naturally happens slower. With my son, his is abnormally thin. So that's something that we have to deal with on a completely different level. So, but here's what I'm looking. I'm looking at men and women's brains. And I say that men have storage boxes. They have these storage boxes in their brains. When they are in a storage box, they are focused. They are on it. They are watching the should I say penguin game here? Can I say penguin game? Yeah. They are watching the penguin game. If I want to sit there and talk about our plans for a birthday party in the middle of a championship game, I'm getting nowhere, right? Nobody's listening to me. They're in the storage box. Women, I say we have spaghetti noodles for brains. That's not a cut. I have my coworkers, mostly, well, they used to be my former coworkers. They used to be mostly men. And I had this one coworker of mine, he would be on the other side of the partition, and he'd be like, "Hey, noodle brain." I'm like, "Yes." So women's brains are like spaghetti noodles. Everything is connected. Everything is intertwined. We naturally connect this to that to the, we naturally connect it all because we can. Men, they can't. They absolutely can't. In fact, one of their storage boxes, to be honest, one of their storage boxes can be filled with absolutely nothing. They can be in a box that's filled with nothing. Where ladies, like you would say to the guys, you'd be like, "Hey, what are you thinking about?" And he's like, "Nothing." That's possible. A guy can actually think about nothing. Women can't do that. We can't relate. At 3 a.m. when we wake up, we're thinking about something. We're always thinking about something. Those noodles are going, and it's all connected. And so, honestly, it's the way men and women think. My boys, I said to my one son, I was annoyed with him for something, so I'm shooting questions at him, and I was flying these questions at him. He looked at me. He said, "Stop." He goes, "Straighten out your noodles. My box is full. I can't answer another one of your questions." And I was like, So either he's playing me or he was listening. Either way, he got me to shut up. You know, so I just did. I stopped. So the way we communicate, we have to work with that, okay? Years ago, think about caveman times. Like, think about all these years ago. What did men do? What was their job? Their job was to be the hunters and the gatherers, right? Their job was to be the protector. So they were going out and they were hunting for food. They were protecting the house. If they couldn't be hyper-focused on getting that food for their family, what would happen? Their family could die. They could die, right? If they were distracted, they could be killed just trying to get food. What were the women doing at home? Everything else, right? They were taking care of the home, the kids, the food, the cleaning. They were doing everything else. So way back when, this is written in our bodies. This is how we communicate. We complement each other. It's good. Women are more emotional, right? Men are more problem solvers. Sometimes you have crossover. Sometimes you have women who are like, I'm not that emotional. Sometimes that happens. But generally speaking, this is how we communicate and we complement each other. We can make it work. We make it work in relationships. So moving on to another way that men and women communicate. Another way that men and women communicate is through pheromones. Has anyone ever heard of pheromones? Pheromones are produced by hormones, okay? So pheromones, they're affected by the fluctuation of hormones. And pheromones are a natural sense that our bodies give off. And it's what attracts us to men and women. I love this. I had to bring this. Love at first smell. So this is not a license I say guys because ladies, you'd never do this. Guys, this is not a license to like not take a shower. Like, oh, she's going to love me the way I smell. No, absolutely not. You still need to shower. But what it is, it's this sense. We sense what we're attracted to, what is complementary to our bodies. It's natural. It's imprinted in how we were made, how we were designed. The Discovery Channel had this documentary. It was called The Science of Sex Appeal. And what it said in it was that biologically, just walking down the street, just encountering people of the opposite sex, our bodies, our senses are automatically trying to figure out if we're attracted to that person. Before we even say hello, our bodies have done that once over, figuring out if we're attracted. It's pheromones. It's this natural attraction that we have to one another. So, like I said, it's stimulated by the production of hormones and the fluctuation of hormones. So guys, what does that mean for you? Testosterone, right? Testosterone, it stimulates the production of sperm. And if you're going to go work out that testosterone, that's going to make your body change physically. Ladies, we can't do that to our bodies unless maybe you would take something artificial, right? But naturally, our bodies don't do that. And ladies, the pheromones that your body gives off is produced by the fluctuation of your hormones. We have estrogen and progesterone. So when estrogen increases in a woman's body, she feels more attractive. And also, she gives off these pheromones that men are more attracted to her. It's just the way it works. And we are attracted to a person that is going to complement us so that it will be a union that has children that have good immune systems for the longevity of humanity. That's the reason it happens. That's the reason why we have pheromones. So the question is, what happened? Right? Because we have relationships that fail. We have marriages that fail. Why? Why is this happening? So we're gonna have a little history lesson. Look at what happened in the world and then in the church. So in the world, we have divorce rates. I have divorce rates from 1930 up until this year, 2020. So in 1930, the divorce rates were low. They were at 16%, okay? What was happening in the church in 1930, all the denominations of the churches believed one thing, that any use of contraception in marriage was morally wrong, that you couldn't do it. In 1930, the Episcopal Church broke off of that. And they said that in grave circumstances, married couples could use contraception. That's what they said in 1930. Since 1930, every church has gone down that slippery slope allowing for contraception in marriage, except for the Catholic Church. So let's look at the divorce rate. 1930, it was 16%. 1940, 20, 1950, 26, 1960, 25. So it's gradually increasing. What's going on in the world? 1950, we're having scientists who are trying to develop a contraceptive pill. So what do they have to do to develop a contraceptive pill? They have to figure out a way that a couple is not going to get pregnant, right? That's their goal. Couple's not going to get pregnant. How do you do that? You're going to have to manipulate hormones. How are they going to manipulate hormones? They're going to do it chemically. So what they did is they looked at men. How are we going to do this? How are we going to manipulate those hormones? So the testosterone stimulates the production of sperm. So if we do that, then we would have to stop that production of sperm or slow it down or something. So they actually developed a contraceptive pill for men. And they did a test group on this contraceptive pill that they developed for men. In the test group, one testicle shrunk. And they were like, there is no man that's going to take this contraceptive pill with that side effect not happening. So they took it off the market. They just took it off the table. They're not going to do this. So they were looking at women. So what's the deal with women's hormones? So we have this fluctuation of hormones. Estrogen increases. When the estrogen increases, the egg is going to be released. When the progesterone increases, the egg is released, and then the progesterone stays elevated and it goes down. So there's this great fluctuation of hormones. The scientists decide this is what we have to do. We have to get so that egg is not released. So they developed a contraceptive pill that would prevent the release of an egg. They did a test group. In the test group, two women died because of the hormones. What they did is they didn't look at women individually and saying, oh, well, you know, we can look at your level of estrogen, your level of progesterone, and tailor it to your body. They didn't do that. They just kind of threw paint at a wall and, okay, if we have these levels, it's going to stop pretty much every woman's body from releasing an egg. Except it also has these awful side effects. What? Say it again. Like death, right? Death is one of the side effects. So what the scientists did is they adjusted those levels of hormones and they put it on the market. And you still have side effects. And one of those side effects is still death. So you have heart attack, stroke, hormonal contraceptives is literally by the World Health Organization classified as a class 1 carcinogen. A class 1 carcinogen. It's a cancer-causing agent. It's right up there with arsenic and smoking. It's a class 1 carcinogen. It is what doctors are giving women for family planning. But here, I'm getting ahead of myself. So I'm not going to go there. We're going to stop. So in the mid-60s, they put it on the market. Let's look at the divorce rates. We're at 25. By 1970, it jumped 10% to 35. Now we have something, there was a law passed of no-fault divorce. So now that's coming into play. So we have the contraceptive pill. What's going on in the world? We have the sexual revolution. We have Woodstock. We have crazy things are happening. JFK was assassinated. Martin Luther King Jr. was assassinated. All these things are, it's like the world has gone wild and there's sex without consequences. Yay! Like, right? This is what's happening in our world. And in the Catholic Church, to be honest, the leaders of the Catholic Church, they're like, listen, we need to get with the times. Every other church has gone down this path where they allow for contraception and marriage. The Catholic Church needs to do this. And so they kind of got on Pope Paul VI, and they said that the church needs to change her teaching. And all these advisors were giving him all this stuff to pray about, all this stuff to think about, and he thanked them for their information. And he went to the shrine of Our Lady of Fatima to pray and to decide what he was going to do. And he wrote an encyclical in answer to this plea from the church. The encyclical that he wrote is called Humanae Vitae. And when he wrote Humanae Vitae, he reaffirmed what the church teaches, but what the church teaches on life. Humanae Vitae means on human life. What does the church teach on life? That life is created by God. We can't destroy life. And I love that your trivia question said about holy. Life is holy. Life is holy. So he reaffirmed this teaching in our church, and it rocked the Catholic world. Not necessarily in a good way. There was a lot of protests about it. People were upset. They were angry. They thought that the Catholic Church was going to go right along with culture. But it didn't happen. It did not happen. So I have a few resources up here, and one of the resources that I have is a copy of Humanae Vitae. Humanae Vitae is an encyclical. It's short, it's to the point, and it's an easy read, and I would highly recommend reading it. But I want to tell you something that he said in Humanae Vitae is he made these predictions. He made four predictions in Humanae Vitae. Pope Paul VI, who's now Saint, Pope Saint Paul VI, he said, open wide the way for marital infidelity and a general lowering of moral standards. The government might force contraceptives upon married couples. There would be a loss of respect for women, a loss of humility regarding humanity's role. We would begin to see ourselves as the ultimate masters of our nature. Remember about our designer? God created male and female. So he's saying that we're going to see ourselves as the ultimate masters of our nature. Doesn't matter what God said, how he created us, how he imprinted the way that we communicate, the way that we have relationships in our bodies. So here we are, 51 years later. We just celebrated the 50th anniversary of Humanae Vitae. And what does our world look like? I'm not going to go back to the slide. What does the divorce rate look like? Actually, if you look at it, it hit its height in the 80s. I think it was 53% or 55%, something like that. And then it came down. In this year, currently, we're at like 42%. And you think, whoa, something good might be happening, right? The divorce rate is lower. No. What's happening? Less marriages. People aren't getting married. They're cohabiting. They're not getting married. So while it might seem like it's lower, it's really not. It's really not. So what's happening? Hormonal contraception. 38 million women use contraceptives. Almost half of them use hormonal contraceptives. Those are those chemicals. So let me explain to you how hormonal contraception works, because I think it's really important to understand exactly how it works. Because what they were looking for is they wanted it to stop the release of the egg, right? They wanted a woman's body to not release that egg so the egg couldn't be fertilized and she couldn't get pregnant. But if they make those chemicals, the synthetic progesterone and estrogen high enough, then women are going to die, right? So they couldn't do that. So they had to lower the chemicals so that she wouldn't die, but they had to do backup plans. So hormonal contraception is designed to stop the release of an egg. But there were two backup plans. Now, what I have here, you can't read it very well because it's kind of fuzzy, but what I have circled is under the words clinical pharmacology. This is an Ortho Evra insert. So you can find this is for the patch. You can find this for the pill, for the shot, for any kind of chemical contraception, it's the same thing. They're all made and designed the same way. Under clinical pharmacology, it will tell you that it is designed to stop the release of an egg, to inhibit ovulation, to suppress ovulation, okay? But the two other things that it's designed to do is, number one, change the characteristics of the cervical mucus. Ladies, what does the cervical mucus do? It nourishes and transports the sperm to the egg. So what the chemicals are designed to do is they're designed to prevent that sperm from getting to the egg. They want the sperm to be incapacitated. So if the egg is released, they're going to incapacitate the sperm. But it doesn't always happen that way, right? And they know that. So if the egg is released and if the sperm gets through, the chemicals actually thin the uterine lining. That's the second backup plan. Thins the uterine lining so that if the egg is fertilized, that fertilized egg, now we have an embryo, new life, it travels through the fallopian tube into the uterine cavity, and the endometrium lining needs to be thick so that that embryo can implant and that baby can kind of take root and grow and sustain. So the chemicals thin that uterine lining so that baby that's been created is lost in the woman's next menstrual cycle. So the way hormonal contraception is designed is completely against what the church teaches on life, on human life. Life is holy. We can't do anything to destroy life. How often does this happen? How often is the egg released? Does the sperm get through and it's fertilized and you lose that baby? We have no idea. We have no idea how often it happens, but the point is that it has the potential to happen. It's the way it's designed to work. If it has the potential to happen, it can never be okay in the Catholic Church. So I got to go back to this. I love being Catholic. I love being Catholic because you can look at the why behind the what. You can see the consistency in her teaching. And you might be like, wow, I don't know, that makes life kind of difficult. Maybe. But she's consistent. And if you believe it, you have to live it. And it's not that hard to live it. I'm telling you, it's just part of your life. It's honestly, it's just part of your life. What else does hormonal contraceptives do? So that's huge. That's huge. But the other thing that hormonal contraceptives do is that they block the pheromones. So that natural attractiveness that we have as men and women, hormonal contraceptives block it. They make it not work. So if you think about how a woman's body works, the estrogen increases, the estrogen drops, the progesterone increases, the egg is released. If you think about the way her body works, this is the way it was designed, this is the way we're created as females, as these amazing women. Men can't do this, ladies. They don't do it. Like we're amazing. We have the capacity to carry within us an image of God. Men can't. We're equal in value and dignity, but we might be a little bit more amazing. I'm just going to put that out there. I'm just going to say it. So, but honestly, hormonal contraceptives stop a woman from being a woman. She doesn't release the egg. Her body is no longer functioning as a female. Hormonal contraceptives block pheromones. She no longer gives off that attractiveness when the estrogen increases. Because hormonal contraceptives flatline the natural hormones. Because now we have synthetic, now we have artificial. So they block the pheromones. And here's the other kicker. Scientists, they know it. And they've known it. This is fascinating. There was a study in 1972, there was a study on monkeys. So just to give you a little bit of information about monkeys that you might not know, that you might really not want to know, but I'm going to tell you anyway. So a little bit of information about monkeys. The male, the alpha male monkey, what he does is he chooses his mate for life. So he chooses his female mate for life. And sometimes, this is not what we do, this is not what we recommend, but sometimes the monkeys will choose more than one female. So, I mean, that's just what they do. So in this test group that they did with monkeys, they took the alpha male. He had chosen 3 females to be his mates. So what they did with those 3 females, with one of them, they injected Depo-Provera, which is hormonal contraception. They gave her a Depo shot. So what that alpha male did is he rejected her. He no longer wanted anything to do with her. And so he only paid attention to the other 2. So then what they did in this test is they injected those other 2 females that were his choice with the Depo shot. He no longer was interested in any of them. That natural attractiveness, the pheromones, was gone. He's not able to think the way we are. He's not able to communicate in the same way that we speak to one another. But that natural attractiveness was gone. And then the rest of the study is not, what he did in reaction to that is not pretty, to be honest. And we're not going to go into what he did. But after the Depo wore off, then he found himself attracted to them again. And he reestablished that alpha male with those female monkeys. 1972. Scientists knew this was happening. They absolutely knew it was happening. If you do some, just some searches on the internet, You're going to find articles. I found these three articles just with a quick search. Birth control pills affect women's taste in men. How the birth control messes up, the birth control pill messes up mutual attraction. The tricky chemistry of attraction. Wall Street Journal, Natural Womanhood, Scientific American. They're all reporting the same thing. But they have something for you. Let me show you what they have for you. You can buy artificial pheromones. What? You can buy artificial pheromones. But who's it going to attract? Because they're not naturally attracting anybody to any, it's all artificial. It has nothing to do with who you are, how you were created, how you're designed. It's all just, like I said, throwing paint at a wall. So what do we have? Where are we in our world? We don't know who we are. We don't know who we are. We don't know who we're attracted to. We have confusion. We have something called gender confusion. I have another book up here. It's called Eclipse of the Body by Christopher West. And it's an excellent book with a lot of information. And the fact of the matter is, as I say this about gender confusion, there's a lot of people that are experiencing this in our world today. There's a lot. There may be people in this room experiencing gender confusion. There may be people that you know, maybe people in your family. When you're talking to people, when you're dealing with people that are experiencing gender confusion, they need our love. They need our support. Not condoning it, because remember, we have a creator. We have a creator who has a plan for our lives. It doesn't make it okay, but we have to use compassion and love when we talk to people that are experiencing gender confusion. So I want to make sure I say that. And remember what I said in the beginning. There's no judgment in truth. The truth is what it is. This is what it is. This is biological. It's chemical. There's studies out there that are proving this. There's no judgment in truth. But we have to look at the truth and we have to understand what it is. Gender confusion. This is a quote by Christopher West. We identify everybody without identifying anybody. But when we identify somebody without reference to his or her body, we identify quite literally nobody. Pope Paul VI understood the power of contraception to eclipse the meaning of the body, casting a dark shadow over the meaning of the gender difference itself, and hence the meaning of marriage and family. It's this ripple effect that we're at right now, that we're confused. We don't know what's happening. We don't know who we're attracted to. We don't know why we're attracted to this person or that person. This is something else I'm going to throw out there, and this also adds to the confusion. There have been fish studies all over the world. In the Pittsburgh, you can go on to the internet and you can find all these studies that have happened in the Pittsburgh rivers. They're doing it in England. I know there were studies in England. But what they're finding in the fish is that male fish have female characteristics. Why? When women take hormonal contraception, whether it's through the shot, the patch, the pill, when they're taking hormonal contraception, what their body doesn't absorb is excreted. And it gets into our water supply. And so what they're finding in our rivers is that fish are having, they're two genders. Male fish have female gender. It's, again, you can just do a search and you find it. Washington Post, The Telegraph, Science Daily, it's all over the place. Confusion. It's happening. So I want to go back to the predictions of St. Paul VI. Open wide the way for marital infidelity and a general lowering of moral standards. What's happened? Now we have sex without consequences. Betrayal in marriage, loss of trust, higher divorce rate, less marriages, cohabitation. With cohabitation, there's no permanence, there's no sacrament, there's no journey to eternity, there's not a goal of heaven. Cohabitation is not marriage prep. One of the articles we have here, if you want to take one. The government might force contraceptives upon married couples. Three examples that we have. In China, years ago, there was a law in China that the couples could only have one child. It was a one-child policy. They could appeal to the government to have more than one child, but the government was very strict on it. And at that time, the women were either given a birth control pill or they were given an IUD. They were not given a choice as to what family planning they could use. If they got pregnant with a second child and they couldn't pay the very high fine that they had to pay to have a second child, then there were forced abortions. So it was forced on the women. They took this fertility awareness, these doctors went into China in the 80s, and they said, we would like to teach the women in China how to learn about their bodies, learn about their fertility, so that they can plan their families accordingly. And the government said, absolutely not. They said, unless it's scientifically proven, you cannot come into this country and teach women this, because women weren't given a choice. There's more to that story. I'll tell you more later. Africa. They would take women who didn't have a lot of money, that were very, very poor, and they would offer them money to try out these contraceptives. Women were dying in Africa. They were experiments. In India, what they do in India is a woman may have a job. Maybe she's a teacher. Maybe she's a professional. She can have one child, and she receives a maternity leave. She can have a second child and get a maternity leave. The third child, there's no maternity leave. If you have that child, you have to come back to work the next day. So they don't necessarily put restrictions, right? But they do. Loss of respect for women. Women are being used for pleasure, the objectification of woman. If a woman takes hormonal contraception, her body is no longer functioning as a woman, right? It's no longer releasing an egg. So what is her body now? Her body's an object. Her body's an object for pleasure. That's it. The side effects of hormonal contraception, we talked about them, right? The side effects are devastating. Stroke, heart attack, moodiness, depression, reduced libido. Like, you're taking hormonal contraception so you can have more sex, but you don't want to have sex. Like, it's not good for women. Pornography, the distortion of reality, there's the loss of respect for women. Guys are turning to pornography. Or even another thing is, if women can't attract men because they're taking hormonal contraception, they're blocking the pheromones, how are they going to try to attract men? They're going to dress a little bit more provocatively. But they're not appealing to a man's sense, that pheromone, that attractiveness, that love. They're appealing to men's lustful desire, right? The fact that they're visually stimulated sexually. That's what they're appealing to. Objectification, loss of respect for women, objectification. A loss of humility regarding humanity's role. We would begin to see ourselves as the ultimate masters of our nature. Abortion, it's now a legal option. Right? It's legal in our country. 54% of women that get pregnant while using hormonal contraceptives have an abortion. 54% of women that get pregnant while using their contraceptives have an abortion. The other thing that I think that goes along with this, we see ourselves as the ultimate masters of our nature. I don't want to be a boy. I don't want to be a girl. I'm going to decide. I'm going to decide who I am. I'm the master. So now what? What are our options? What are we looking at today? We have a superpower. Men and women, we have a superpower, and it's called our fertility. We are amazing. We are captivating. We are courageous. We're strong. We're wonderfully made. God has a plan for us. Our fertility is our superpower. These pheromones are awesome. We need to embrace it. We need to learn about our bodies. We need to know who we are. We need to know how we were created. We need to know why we were created. This is a chart. I'm just going to kind of focus on the middle two boxes, the little boxes in the chart. This is just kind of like a snapshot of what's happening in a woman's brain during her menstrual cycle. And ladies, this is good for you, but guys, this is almost better for you, right? So you can understand what's happening. And you can really kind of be in awe of women and what's happening in their bodies. When she ovulates right in the middle, she has a better imagination, better perception. Think about those noodles. Memory, social abilities. It all works together. Right at ovulation, she feels most attractive herself, but she's most attractive to you. Right at ovulation. After ovulation, toward the end of her cycle, she feels a sense of calmness. She actually needs restorative sleep. In the beginning, she has better spatial skills. Sometimes she's a little bit more anxious. When you know these, gentlemen, when you know this, you can really get to know the woman that you're attracted to on a level that nobody else will understand. And that's okay. That's how you communicate. That's how our bodies are designed. Ladies, when you get to know your body, you know exactly what's happening and why. I had a friend of mine, she texted me this one day. She went through this list of how she was feeling that day. She goes, tell me what's happening to my hormones. And I'm like, well, right now they're flatlined. So that's exactly why you're feeling the way you're feeling. I mean, there's a reason why we feel the way we feel. There's a reason why our body does every single thing that our body does. There's a reason for it. If your body's not functioning the way it's supposed to normally function, then you need to find out why. You need to look into it. Fertility awareness. We teach women how to know what their body is doing, what it's supposed to be doing, and what that means in terms of fertility. There's like 5 days that a woman can get pregnant in her cycle. 5 days. It is so easy to learn about it. In my family, in my marriage, we used something called fertility awareness our entire marriage. Every single one of our kids was planned. We planned our kids, and then when it got to a point where we felt like we needed to postpone pregnancy, we did. And we did it naturally. We used something called fertility awareness. We used the Billings method of ovulation. That's what we learned. So I learned about my body, what it means to ovulate, when it's going to release the egg, when I'm fertile, when I'm not fertile. If we were trying to postpone a pregnancy, then we didn't have sex on days that I was fertile. It's that simple. It's that simple. And women's bodies can be a little bit more complicated than that, right? Not every woman, I think about 10% of women have a 28-day cycle. So not every woman have like this, is like clockwork. But you learn about your body. You learn what it means to ovulate. You learn when you're ovulating, and you make it work in your lives. You make it work with what you're doing. So I want to tell you about some people that did that. There's the U.S. soccer team. They discovered fertility awareness. The coaches discovered fertility awareness. What they did is they told all their players to get off of contraception, and they started tracking their players' cycles. And they started training accordingly. So when there's a certain time in a woman's cycle that she's prone to soft tissue injury. So you're not going to push that training if she's prone to soft tissue injury. You're going to back off a little bit. There's a certain time in her cycle that she's more aggressive. So those are the players that you're going to put out on the field to be more aggressive. There's a certain time that her cycle is telling us so many things about her bodies. When these coaches did this for the U.S. soccer team, they won the World Cup. And they attributed winning the World Cup to knowing about their players' cycles and practicing them and using them accordingly. There's a woman who won the 2017 New York City Marathon. Same thing. She trained according to her cycle. And she said she won that marathon because of her training, because she worked with her body, knowing how her body works, knowing what's happening, and working with it accordingly. It works. It's good. So where do you go from here? So I have all these resources over here. I have this, I would highly recommend this article. It's called Why Didn't Somebody Tell Me the Truth by Vicki Thorne. It's an excellent article. I have enough here for everybody to take. Like I said, I have Cohabitation is Not Marriage Prep. I have brochures here from Natural Womanhood for women and for men to take and know what it means, learn about your bodies. The whole topic of fertility awareness and knowing about your bodies, that's a whole other talk. I could go on for another hour and talk about that. We have classes in Pittsburgh. I know it's a hall, but we have classes in Pittsburgh. We call them Discover Your Superpower. Ladies, we teach you. We teach you to learn about your cycle. We teach you what it means to ovulate, how to know when you're ovulating, how to know if that egg is viable. If you're trying to achieve a pregnancy, this is when you want to have intercourse. If you're trying to avoid a pregnancy, this is when you want to not have intercourse if you're trying to postpone. So I have that information up here. The other information that I have up here are some books. I can't give you the books, but they're resources. You can take a picture of them, maybe order them yourself. And I have, if you know anybody that is getting married, if you yourself are planning a wedding, we have marriage prep. We have marriage prep resources, so I have a few things up here for that. But what do you do next? You learn about yourselves. Learn about your body. Know that you're created. You're created by love. God is love. He is our designer. He designed our bodies. He created us. He gave us these imprints on how to have relationships, how to communicate, how to know one another and complement each other. You were made by love. You are made for love and to love. So men, what I have to say to you is be a man. Be a man. Respect the women in your life. If you respect and honor the women in your life, you're going to be respected and honored. You're going to have kind of like an advantage because you know women in a way that other people don't. Love. Love in a beautiful and pure way. Love. Men, you're strong. You're strong and you're courageous. Women, learn about your body. Learn about who you are, how you were created. Know yourself. Remember, you're beautiful. You're captivating. You're amazing. Does anybody have any questions? Yes. Yeah, well, I think it's just, again, biology. So what she was asking is when women sink, like you're kind of like in sync with your period. So if you work with or live with ovulating women, it is a thing where your cycles are going to start to kind of be in sync and on the same. And I believe there is a reason for that, and it goes back to like ancient times, and I couldn't even begin to try to explain it. But yeah, I think there was a reason for that way back when. But it is a thing. Does anybody else have any questions?
I have a question. So we're talking about hormonal contraceptives. But many people use them not for contraception, but to regulate period for health reasons.
Sure. So that's a great question. So first off, if you're using hormonal contraceptives to regulate your cycle, you're not. That's not what you're doing. Hormonal contraceptives will not regulate anything. They're going to stop. They stop your body from ovulating. That's what they're designed to do. So it doesn't actually regulate your cycle. What it does is make you bleed every 28 days. That's all it does. So it's not going to heal you. It's not going to help you. It's going to put your body on hold. It's actually going to make your body, trick your body into thinking that it's pregnant. So, but that being said, many women go to their doctors with medical issues, endometriosis, PCOS, where the doctors immediately, acne, doctors immediately put women on hormonal contraceptives. What I would say is do some research. Progesterone. So natural progesterone. So with natural progesterone, you have to be careful to use it during a certain time in your cycle. So if you would use natural progesterone the entire part of your cycle, you're rendering yourself infertile because of when your estrogen increases, you're having that progesterone there. You don't want to have elevated progesterone when your estrogen is increasing. So the natural progesterone, a lot of times with that, and I don't know why he put you on that. So But natural progesterone will extend your luteal phase, which sometimes women don't have a long enough luteal phase. So if I can go back in the cycle just to show you, I'm sorry, in the slide, just to show you where your luteal phase is. So from the time that you ovulate until your next period, okay, your luteal phase, you have this buildup of progesterone. What's happening is your body, a woman's body is constantly preparing for pregnancy. Every cycle is preparing for pregnancy. So if she's not pregnant, then she gets her period and the lining sheds and then it starts all over again. So the luteal phase, from ovulation until her next cycle, it needs to be at least 11 days, between 11 and 16 days. If it's not between 11 and 16 days, then she is not fertile. It is not a fertile cycle. So many times doctors will use progesterone to extend the luteal phase so that it would be a more normal cycle. So the only thing with using progesterone, you have to make sure that you're not using your progesterone during the follicular phase, during the phase when the estrogen is increasing so that the egg would be released. So if you use progesterone during that time, then you might be preventing the release of an egg, you know, but not realizing that you're doing that. So it's not birth control per se, but it's not, but it might not have the effect that you're looking for. Does that make sense? I'm not a doctor. I don't pretend to be a doctor. I just know like how the fluctuations work. So what I would recommend is to ask your doctor about it. Ask, you know, so a lot of times doctors will say, you know, oh, we're gonna check your progesterone on day 24 of your cycle. Okay, well, day 24 might be during the follicular phase. Like, you might have a 40-day cycle, right? If you have a 28-day cycle, then it might have the effect he wants. But if you don't, if it's right around the time you're ovulating, then your progesterone is going to be low. He's not testing it at the right time. So you really have to know what your body's doing and track your body, tracking your cycles to understand when you need that progesterone. Does that make sense? So a lot of times doctors will put women on hormonal contraceptives for, like I said, PCOS, endometriosis, those kind of reasons, and it's not healing them. All it's doing is stopping it all. Endometriosis needs to have diagnostic surgical intervention. PCOS, you need to have hormonal studies done, looking at your hormones, figuring out what it is, and ultimately, if that doesn't help, you have to have surgical procedures. So you want to go to a doctor that really knows what's happening in a woman's cycle and is trained in those surgical procedures. We have that. It's called natural procreative technology, and there are doctors who are trained in that, and it's a specialty area. And you really have to look and to find those doctors. I don't know if there's any in around here. I know in Pittsburgh, we would recommend that they go to Camp Hill, which is near Harrisburg. It's not close. But if I can speak about what the church says about women who take contraceptives, not for a contraceptive reason, but for a medical condition. So just to address that a little bit, the church does not say that women cannot treat a medical condition. Absolutely, you can treat a medical condition if that's what you're doing with a hormonal contraceptive. If you're taking it not to prevent a pregnancy, but for your medical condition, then the church is not going to say you can't do that. Of course you can. But you have to make sure that you're taking it for the right reasons, understanding what that is. Is that okay? Yes.
Why do you suppose, my impression is that there are a lot of physicians who prescribe hormonal contraception for these other reasons. Why do you suppose that is? Do you think that they are, it's just easy for them to say that? Do you think that they're getting pressured from or persuaded by pharmaceutical companies? Do you think that it has to do with their medical training, that in med schools there's kind of a ideology that takes hold? Or
Absolutely.
Are there some med schools where they don't, you know, that are more reasonable or...
So absolutely, I think it's part of their medical training. And the reason I say that is Renew the I Do. We just flew in this doctor. Her name is Dr. Marguerite Duane. And she is the founder of an organization called FACTS. And it's the Fertility Appreciation Collaborative to teach the science. And her goal is to teach medical professionals about fertility because they don't know the facts. And so that's her goal and her foundation is to instruct medical professionals on what it is, and then she encourages them to go get trained. So she just instructs medical professionals because they're not learning it in med school. But then we also have something called FEM. FEM trains medical professionals to do targeted hormone panels. They have protocols where they look at hormones to help women, and they are training medical professionals as well. So we have Natural Procreative Technology, which comes out of Omaha, Nebraska. It's the Creighton model, and it's Dr. Thomas Hildreth developed it. So it's a specialty area. And to be able to do the surgical procedures, you have to be trained, and then you have to be an OBGYN to do those surgical procedures. But he has like an 800-plus page surgical medical textbook that outlines all of the procedures that are in line with the church helping women with fertility. But it's not mainline. It's not what's taught in the medical schools. But it's out there. And then FEM is focusing more on hormones. They do like this protocol with a targeted hormone panel. And we do have somebody that's trained in FEM in Steubenville. And actually we have a doctor, but he doesn't do surgical procedures, also trained in NAPRO, and he's getting trained in FEM. So we have them, but they're not trained in their med schools.
Do you see any movement in this area? Because it seems to me so bizarre that we've got a population of people who don't want hormones in their milk, and so they're going to eat everything that's organic. At the same time that they're consuming these other hormones, I mean, as far as you're aware, is there like growing awareness?
Sure. I mean, I think there is. I mean, that's one of the reasons why I'm here. You know, I think there absolutely is. People are kind of catching on to that we're taking our normal, healthy, functioning bodies and making them diseased. Like we're making them not work the way that they were created to work. And I think people are catching on. I think women, I mean, this is empowering for women. Like why would you take something that's going to make your body not function as a woman? Why would you take chemicals that's going to alter your body? I don't understand that. Fertility awareness, doing things naturally, empowers women to not only know about their body, but to be aware if there's something, if there's potentially a problem, then she can take that information to her doctor, and her doctor can then act on it from there. I mean, it's absolutely empowering for women, and men as well. Because when you look at those blocked pheromones, it's like, I don't even know who I'm attracted to. You know, there are married couples who, you know, say they're married for a few years, they're hormonally contracepting, and they're like, oh, okay, you know, like, it's time, we're gonna try to have kids. And she goes off of hormonal contraception, and then they look at each other and they're like, I don't even like you. Like, I don't even feel like I know. It happens. It happens where people break up after they go off their contraception because that natural attractiveness is not there, was not there from the beginning. You know, I mean, it happens. It's factual. It's scientific. It's out there. But yeah, I mean, we're at Renew the I Do. We're trying to get the word out. And a lot of times, you know, we're talking to engaged couples. I said to Father before we started, we're talking to engaged couples who are already contracepting. You know, so they're getting ready to get married. They're already contracepting. And now we're saying, you know what, like a couple months before you're married, why don't you go off the pill? Like, they don't want to do that. You know, like it's hard to explain that to them, and it's hard to empower them. And the other thing is, all of that being said, I truly believe that women, in taking these hormonal contraceptives that are really just, they're not healthy, they have terrible side effects, all of the above, they're doing it to be responsible. They're not doing it to be unhealthy. They're not doing it out of a bad place. They're doing it to be responsible because they feel like that's their only choice. And I think that's where we have to be the ones who yell a little louder and say, no, like there's a better choice. And the better choice is not to take that. The better choice is to know, let your body be who you are and let your body be healthy. And if you don't want to have a baby, then learn about making that choice, because the where we're making those choices are in our brains, right? We're making those choices in our brains and we're communicating. If it's not a good time for you to have a baby, then your spouse is going to cooperate with you on that. You're going to have a conversation about it. I remember when my husband and I, we talked about having 3, 4, 5 kids. You know, we just knew that we were going to be open to life and we wanted to have several children. So, and then we talked about having all of our kids like 18 months apart, because that was realistic. And we got pregnant with our first one, and when he was about 9 months old or 10 months old, we got pregnant with our second one, and so they're 19 months apart. We're like, yay, NFP. We're on this. We got it. We're good. We can do it. And then when my second one was 9 months old, I said to my husband, there's no way. Like, I can't even think about having another baby in 9 months. You know, like, it was too much. So Pope Paul VI, and I didn't say this, but Pope Paul VI in Humanae Vitae, he addresses that. He says you need to be responsible. There's something called responsible parenthood, and you need to be responsible people knowing what you can handle. And if mentally, physically, emotionally, financially, you cannot handle another child, then you need to do the responsible thing and not, but do it naturally. Do it naturally. And the natural methods to achieve pregnancy are effective, but also to avoid pregnancy are effective. The natural methods to avoid pregnancy, if you follow the rules, it's not a diet. You can't cheat on it, right? If you follow the rules, they can be up to 99% effective. Let me go back to that story about China. So in China, the doctors who developed the Billings method, they developed the Billings method in Australia. They brought it to America in the 70s, and they went to China in the 80s. So in China, they said, absolutely not. You cannot teach this to the women. And they said, well, how about if we kind of do a test group of women and we don't take out the IUDs? Because an IUD, unfortunately, an IUD will allow a woman to ovulate, and if that egg is fertilized, it destroys the baby. So that's how an IUD works. But they said, how about if we use women who have an IUD? Because they can recognize the signs of ovulation. Okay, so the government said, okay. So that was the mid-80s. Fast forward to today, not only did they prove that this was a scientifically proven method, today there's 3.5 million fertile women who are learning the Billings method, using the Billings method. There's 48,000 trained teachers of the Billings method in China teaching this method. They did a study by the World Health Organization somewhere in the 2000s, and it was 99.5% effective in avoidance of pregnancy in China. And what that says is that the method is effective, but you got to follow the rules. So, I mean, you know, if it's your anniversary and you're celebrating and you know you're actually fertile, but let's just throw caution to the wind, and if we get pregnant, that's not method failure. That's user. And it's not failure, it's a baby, right? Babies are beautiful. Life is beautiful. It's not failure, but you understand your cycle. You understand where you are. You understand if you're fertile. And if you have intercourse on days that you're fertile, that you could get pregnant and you could have a baby. I mean, that's called being open to life, you know? So it doesn't necessarily mean that the method is failing. It actually means that it's working, but you have to have a conversation as husband and wife. What are we looking at? Are we trying to avoid a pregnancy? Why are we trying to avoid a pregnancy? Why do we want to postpone? Is it a good reason? Okay, then let's go for a walk. You know, let's watch a movie. Let's go out to dinner, whatever. Like, there's ways to love each other without being physically intimate, you know. Yes.
I just want to have a comment that I think this is one of the most beautiful examples of the protection of the Holy Spirit over the church, to not teach in error. Because, you know, we've had the 50 years.
Yep.
We see the prophecy that came true, etc.
Right.
And, you know, so obviously God can work good out of this evil. And one of the good things that I've seen is I've seen converts to the faith because of Humanae Vitae. Now, we saw that crazy descent unleashed, like you said, and it's terrible. But I've also seen the opposite happen because they realize, and there's no way, you know, Paul VI was under tremendous pressure.
Absolutely.
Tremendous pressure, and he had no way of knowing the scientific stuff behind it.
Right. That's what I always say that too. I know that Pope Paul VI wasn't talking to researchers. You know, he wasn't saying, well, exactly how is this going to be developed? Is this going to fly in the face of what the church teaches? I'm like, no, he was praying, right? The Holy Spirit was guiding him and writing Humanae Vitae, and it's so beautiful. It's so amazing. He just talks about the beauty of who we are and how we're created. Like, God has a design. He has a design in our bodies. He has a design for our life. And it's amazing.
No guarantee that you're not not going to get divorced, but if you compare the divorce rates, you'll see a great difference.
Right. So couples that practice this, that use fertility awareness, that practice what you said, natural family planning, if you practice this in your marriage, that you have a 95% success rate in your marriage. There's a less than 5% divorce rate among couples who use this in their marriage the way Pope Paul VI outlined it. So it's looking at all of those things, financial, emotional, psychological, medical, all the reasons why you might want to postpone a pregnancy, and talking about it and deciding where you are, what you're doing. And the other thing is this is not supposed to be a marriage talk, so I apologize for getting into marriage, but when you use this in your marriage and you're trying to avoid a pregnancy, there's a reason why you're trying to avoid a pregnancy. The way we're designed, talking about God's design for us, the way we're designed is to desire each other when we're fertile. So we desire each other when we're fertile. So if we're trying to postpone a pregnancy, we've got to have a pretty good reason to do that. And if we do, then we're waiting and we're waiting and we're waiting to come together in the marital act as husband and wife. And when you do, after that period of waiting, it's amazing. It's exciting. It's like this mini honeymoon within your cycle. Like every single cycle, you have this little mini honeymoon because of this love and respect and honor that you have for each other and for your bodies and how you were created. And it keeps that excitement in your marriage, absolutely.
So just to do some summation, in case some of this is the first time you're hearing this. So besides the health effects too, the reason why, we almost oversimplify, I should say, the reason why the church has always been, again, and when we say the church, we mean our Lord too, why against contraception, A, it stops life, right? That's the number one reason. But B, it makes sex into simply pleasure, which means you're using the other person as an object of pleasure, which is against their dignity, right? They're human persons. And so, and like Pope St. Paul VI said, it creates, there's so many rippling effects from that. So against life, and turns people into objects of pleasure. Natural family planning, the fertility awareness, that is not natural contraception, because you are not opposed to, like, if you open to life while respecting the how your body naturally works. And so, when Lord willing, if you know you all are called to the sacrament of holy matrimony and you're going to marriage prep, make sure, ask your priest to make sure that he sets you up, or at least refers you to someone to teach you how to know your body, how to do natural family planning. Most marriage preps do that, but if for some reason it seems like yours is not, tell him. Ask him to, okay? We have many in West Virginia, we have many RNs who teach it, and we're very gifted with that. And we have ones, so if you get married through me, you're forced to, right? I make you go to it. In two methods. I do the Creighton, and I also do what's the word? It's that one.
Symphilothermal.
Yeah.
Through the couple, coupley?
Yeah. So you learn different methods to how to do it. However, you know, the couple is always much more free. We think we're free through contraception, but what you do is you turn yourself into an object of pleasure, which you're not. You're sons and daughters of the Most High God. And so the Church, in her wisdom, because of the magisterium, has been guarded from that error. So anyway, so that's just a quick summation. There's so much more. I actually have lots of material on contraception, if you ever want to read it. And I had tapes called Green Sex, right? It's natural sex, right? No contraception.
That is an excellent talk.
So, Green Sex. Yes, by Jason Edwards.
Yep.
So lots of information. And then, so this is the first time you're hearing this, and you're kind of off-put by it. All I ask you to say is be open to learning more. And an openness of the heart to trust the guidance of Christ in your life. Anyway, we want to thank Dolores for coming. She came all the way from Pittsburgh, 82 miles.